So Amarillo's right on the way.
So you came in from Laramie.
I did.
Today or yesterday?
No, last night.
I was going to say, it's not even possible. You didn't drive all night.
We played up at Wyoming Public Radio yesterday morning up
there. Oh, fantastic.
And then drove. Yeah, it was great, man.
That's
wonderful. They're another station like you guys that broadcast to an enormous region of people.
We love those people. We love those stations.
They're very, very, very nice people.
That's great. Well, thank you also for coming in and visiting with us and playing us some music. Now, you are on tour with your most recent album, Burden of Unshakable Proof. You've got kind of a really great story about writing this album. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, this one's let's see, where to even begin? After the last record that we made, we decided that so my husband is the producer. He's also an audio engineer and has been doing it for years and years and has worked in a couple of different studios, but really wanted to build our own at our house in large part so that we could do the recording on our own time and our own rhythms without having to, you know, when you rent a studio, you're always a little bit under the clock and, you know, you sort of have the classic 8-hour days, and we wanted to be able to record in pajamas or record morning voice.
You wanted those 14-hour days.
Yeah, 14-hour days. You know, we just kind of wanted to do it. And obviously the end goal will be to also work with other musicians as well in the studio, but we were sort of the guinea pig for the studio. So we got started building it a couple of years ago, and, you know, things always take longer than you think they will. So it took about 2 years to get it finished. And in the meantime, when we started building, I pretty much thought I was done writing for the album. But then as time went on, I thought, well, I might as well just keep writing. Here I am. So by the time we got around to getting started on the recording, I think we had like 27 songs that we were ready to work on.
Oh, wow. So you had multiple albums.
Too many. Yeah. So we thought about doing a double record, and then we realized that, you know, attention spans being what they are, ours included, we decided a good 10-song record would be a good place to start, and then we would just continue on, because now we've got the studio. We can make records till our teeth fall out.
That's fantastic. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about the studio.
So the studio is just, there's a lot of vintage gear that Rip's been collecting over the years, and then, you know, a lot of my instruments, a lot of his instruments. It's small, but it's got three little rooms, so we can still do it as a full band if we want to, or it's got, you know, it's cool. It's nice because it's right there in our backyard.
That's really wonderful. Yeah. It's like a tiny home. There needs to be a new HGTV reality show, Tiny
we
Studio.
We actually joked that if one day when we're old, we'll just like sell all the gear and we'll convert it into one of those like little IKEA, because it could totally be, it has a tiny kitchen and a tiny bathroom and, you know, we'll just go live in the studio and live out our days there.
Yeah. Convert it to a ham can camper.
Yeah.
Maybe go up with the food trucks, have a karaoke camper.
Maybe so.
I'm giving you so many ideas.
I like where you're going with this. Yeah.
So we had recently Gabrielle Louise in here, and mm-hmm. she also is a young singer-songwriter, also blonde, and she's also done a TED Talk just like you. So I was thinking maybe there was something going on. She also independently raised her funds through crowdsourcing mm-hmm. and fan base, as you do, and mm-hmm. she told us a little bit about that. What is it like? So many independent artists right now are doing it like you're doing it.
Yeah, so I was talking about this with them yesterday on the radio, too. I feel really lucky because I've been doing this long enough that I had fans before that whole thing started. So, like, the very first record I ever made, I guess the second one that I ever made, I started with crowdfunding, but that was in 2004, long before, you know, Kickstarter ever worked. And I just did PayPal, and it was exactly like an NPR fund drive. Basically, I would send an email to people with the different levels saying, if you can support me at this level, these are the extra bonuses that you'll get, you know, an extra t-shirt or your name in the credits or whatever. And so I've actually been financing my records that way. I've financed the last 8 that way.
That's incredible.
And it is really nice because it makes you feel like you're doing it for someone. You're not just like throwing a CD out there, an album out there into the void and hoping that somebody hears it. You know that at the very least there is like this core group of people that really want you to keep making music. Mm-hmm. And that's a really nice feeling, honestly.
And now your fan base actually began not in this country, is that correct?
Yeah, not really. I mean, I did. I started playing in Italy, and then I came back to Texas, and I did play some in Houston and Austin, so that kind of kicked off there. But then I moved back to Italy, and I started playing with a band over there. So for a long time, I had, you know, I've always had like a good solid Texas fan base, but outside of Texas, it was mostly Europe, just because I spent about half of the year there touring with those guys. So.
So most musicians aren't like, you know, Texas or Italy.
Right. It's a little bit random.
Tell us a little bit about your music that you did in Italy. You had a really delightful band name.
Yeah, I played with these guys. That we called them Ice Cream on Mondays. That is related to my gelato addiction. Most gelaterias in Italy are closed on Mondays. That's their day off. So getting ice cream on Monday was a near impossibility. But for somebody as addicted as me, it was highly important.
It was your challenge.
It was sort of, yeah, it was a challenge whenever. Exactly. So, yeah, those guys were awesome because I met them through Friends of Friends and we really hit it off. And they were sort of, they're Italian, but they might as well have been, they were born in the wrong time and place. Their favorite bands are like the Jayhawks and Wilco and Neil Young. And so they played of like a very classic sort of Texas Americana kind of music that paired really well with my songwriting. So we made 3 records together and did a lot of touring in Europe and the States. I brought them over here a couple times, and I'm very grateful for the time that I got to spend making music with them. It was fun.
That's wonderful. Yeah. All right, I think we need to hear a song now.
Yeah, this is off the new record, totally unrelated. This was recorded with my Texas band. But it's called 206 Bones, and it came from a book that I read a couple years ago called A Constellation of Vital Phenomenon. Another mouthful of a title right there. And there is a line in there about how the human body has all these bones that can break and regenerate and pretty much take care of themselves, but you only have the one heart, and it doesn't always work out as well once it gets good and truly shattered, you know.
So. Can't argue with that. All right, Vanessa Peters on High Plains Morning.
Pockets full of spare keys to houses I don't live in anymore. They weigh me down completely, but I cannot seem to let them take their leave of me. And after so long of carrying sharp words on my tongue, I've earned the right to be earnest. Pare it down to the last few things. Well, the last few things to get done are always the hardest. 206 bones and only one heart. 206 bones and only one. And when the woodhouse it burns down, all that's left are bolts and hinges, nails and screws. We couldn't hold it all together when the flame lit the fuse. 206 bones and only 206 bones and only one heart. And lately we work all the time to keep our hearts from getting broke, afraid of missing out, afraid of letting go. But 206 bones and only one heart. 206 bones and only one heart. 206 bones.
You just heard Vanessa Peters live on High Plains Morning on High Plains Public Radio. 206 bones. Pretty good.
Thanks.
That's really beautiful.
It's got a funky grammar line in there. I thought about you as I was singing it because you and I have already had some grammar connections. There's that line where I sing afraid of getting broke, and I'm like, I know that's not actually good grammar, y'all.
But You can say broke. You can say woke. Stay woke.
Stay woke.
Stay broke.
Stay broke.
You know, when looking through your website, which is, let's give the folks your website.
It's VanessaPeters.com.
Wow, that's so, this can be so hard to remember.
I know. Well, Vanessa, people never spell it right. So it's V-A-N-E-S-S-A.
That's the way to spell Vanessa.
That's what I thought.
That's
but
the way.
Turns out it's right. Open to interpretation. Evidently.
It's the High Plains way. So VanessaPeters.com. There's a lot more information about Vanessa. There's videos. You can check out some more information about her music. And after looking at, you've been reviewed. You've been doing this for a while. You've got some reviews and some things that folks have said about you. They've said the depth and substance of her skillfully crafted lyrics. They said Featherlight Melancholy sounds sky blue and confident. This is some really poetic stuff they're saying about you. Isn't that beautiful? Can you talk a little bit about how it is that you write? I mean, it's a very literary style, and I just want to hear a little bit about how you go about doing that.
Yeah, so I'm sort of the classic nerdy English major. I love to read, and I really, most of the music that I am attracted to is, you know, it's got to have lyrical depth. Obviously, I want it to have an awesome melody and whatever else, but I've got to connect when I read the lyrics or listen to them. And a lot of the writing I do comes from sort of a short story mentality, I guess. I often start off with maybe just a phrase or a line that catches me, but I'm usually trying to tell some sort of story in the song. And I don't really feel like a bard, you know. I don't really feel like a troubadour. I don't write like the classic 6-minute folk song that tells a story in that sense. I just kind of like to set a scene, and I like to leave enough space in it that somebody can go inhabit it and it can become about whatever they want it to be about. I've never written a murder ballad that's obviously about the man that goes to avenge his lovers, whatever. Like, I prefer to throw in some details, but then leave space. And I really like it when people come up to me and say, oh, I love that song, you know, the one that's about whatever, whatever. And I don't have any clue what they're talking about, because it's definitely not what I thought it was about when I wrote it, but that's what it became for them. And I think that's really important, to leave people space to move into your songs.
To interpret it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The emotional narrative is there, but it's very, very much open to interpretation. You've described this most recent album, The Burden of Unshakable Proof, as your most important album. Can you tell us why?
Because it sounded good on the press release. No. Just kidding. No, it was because, you know, this is my 10th record that I've made. With every album that I make, I kind of have to ask myself, like, do I still have something important to say? Do I still have a reason to release this? Do I have a reason to release these as a collection instead of just like maybe 10 singles on iTunes, which, you know, nowadays is what a lot of people do and what I could easily have done. But it was just important, I guess, because I felt like these songs were a little more political, a little less about heartbreak and loneliness, and a little bit more global in scope, I guess. I tried to write songs that were a little, I feel like all of us are struggling these days with the world. I mean, doesn't, even aside from the political election and whatever else, like these are weird times that we're living in, right?
Surely.
And so it just felt like it was important to write some songs that touched on that and not just navel gazing.
What do you think, going from 27 songs and having to hack it down to 10, tell us a little bit about what that vetting process looked like for you. You emotionally know, and just practically.
It was actually pretty easy, luckily. These were the 10 that were obviously that lived together. Like the other ones were different styles, or maybe they were different. These 10 sort of lived together thematically and sonically. We only ended up hacking one that was really hard. It's a song called Get Started. And we kind of wanted to put it at the top of the record or the end of the record, because it's kind of cool to end a record with a song called Get Started. And it's a little bit about like not letting time pass you by, you know. Get going while you can, because it's going to be over before you know it. But it didn't quite live in the same place sonically, and we didn't want to waste it, if that makes any sense. We wanted it to be good and not be like a throwaway song on the record. So we went ahead and set that one aside, and it's definitely we're going to find a way to work it into the next one.
Is there a way to work it in
tonight,
right now?
I don't know if I remember the chords off the top of my head. I'll ponder it.
Ponder it. I'm going to throw that out there.
It is on my Bandcamp page. I started last year this, I don't know if your listeners are familiar with Bandcamp, but it's a really cool site that, in the same way of iTunes or whatever else, it's, I mean, you can go buy music and download it. But the cool thing about it is they're really great about the way they support indie artists. They pay much better than any other site like iTunes does. And they also allow you to create these little basically it's like a fan club or a subscription, and someone can pay X amount of money per year and they get your entire back catalog. So that's nice because, I mean, it's a lot cheaper than buying each album individually. But then also you can set it up so that subscribers get demos or unreleased songs. So like, so my subscribers did get started. So they've all heard it out there.
So that's another way to cultivate as an independent
secret
artist.
Listeners. Yeah.
Getting
yeah.
people out there. So that's Bandcamp. I'll go ahead and add a link to that on the post that I'll put on hppr.org. And I will also tweet that at High Plains Jenny. All right. I think it's perfect time for another song, Vanessa.
This is one of those politically minded songs. It's called Mending Fences. And I wrote it a couple years ago thinking maybe things would be better now than they are. But here we all are. And the whole point of the song is that if we just keep doing the same things over and over, we're going to get the same results. So got to learn to think outside the box or something. I don't know. It's called Mending Fences. Mending fences while throwing wrenches into well-oiled machines. Driving horses down well-traveled courses never gets you what you need. And I don't know when everything became impossible. Don't know when everything became an obstacle. Maybe I just ran out of steam. Maybe I just woke up from a long, long dream. And how can anyone not look about them and not feel the world come crashing down? The strange sensation of shaking foundations is driving us underground. And I don't know when everything became impossible. Don't know when everything became an obstacle. Maybe I just ran out of steam. Maybe I just woke up from a long, come untethered, we've come undone, but still we march to battle, flags held high. We're always fighting wars that can't be won, but we've stopped asking why. And I don't know when everything became impossible. Don't know when everything became an obstacle. Maybe I just ran out of steam. Maybe I just woke up from a long, long dream. Maybe I am trapped inside a long, long dream.
That was Mending Fences, Vanessa Peters, live on High Plains Morning off her most recent album, The Burden of Unshakable Proof. Let's talk about the
title. Fast.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say, let's just talk about that very literary title real quick. Can you give us any intel on the backstory of that? That has to be something.
Yeah, it's actually a line from All of These Years. All of These Years is a song. It's the first song on the record. And it's from the second verse where it says, the heavy weight of expectation that hung on all of us, the burden of unshakable proof. So it's that song is definitely one that I very intentionally left very vague. I know what it's about, and everybody else can just kind of figure it out. But it is, I described that line a little bit. In Italian, it was really difficult to translate. The Burden of Unshakable Proof was like, I didn't realize it when I embarked upon it, but my Italian record label was like, what the hell does that mean? And
can we hear what it sounds like in Italian?
Il peso della prova incrollabile. The weight of uncrumblable.
Yeah. I love it.
Unshakable. But there really isn't a great word for unshakable.
So when I do a Vanessa Peters cover album, it's going to be called The Weight of Uncrumblable
Proofing.
Got it.
Proofing. So it's sort of about, just take an example. This is not actually what the song is about, but let's say that you believe your significant other is cheating on you and you are looking for the proof, but you also kind of don't want to find it because you know once you find it, you're going to have this weight that you're going to have. Now what do you do with it?
Right.
Like, now where do we go from here? Mm. So that's sort of what that means.
Your music has been compared to singer-songwriters such as Beth Orton, which we play a lot on the show, Suzanne Vega. I personally think your phrasing a little bit kind of sounds a little like Amy Mann.
Yeah.
Who are awesome. You? Are these people that you listen to, or are these like completely like, oh yeah, okay?
Amy Mann is one of my favorites, yeah. And
beautiful.
And I love Beth Orton as well. I get Suzanne Vega all the time in Europe, but I don't actually hear it. But I'm perfectly okay with it because I think mm-hmm. she's great. But I think it's also just because she's very well known in Europe. And so that's kind of who people gravitate towards, you know. But yeah, Amy Mann is a big influence of mine. I love Sarah Harmer. She's a Canadian singer-songwriter, kind of in the vein of Kathleen Edwards, that sort of music. And she's fantastic. So
I'm going to have you write all these down. We're going to upload.
Because
I don't think I have either of those artists.
Oh, yeah. You need Sarah. She's fantastic.
What did you grow up on?
Billy Joel. Loads of Billy Joel.
Excellent.
Which I used to totally be embarrassed about because the music police will look at you like you are a total loser.
Oh, I've been called out on Billy Joel before.
But man, I don't care anymore.
Me neither.
I know every word of every Billy Joel song, and everybody else can just get over themselves. If they
I don't know why they go to extremes.
Right?
Sorry, that was corny.
No, that was awesome.
Yeah.
So I listened to lots of Billy Joel and Elton John, that kind of, you know, singer-songwriter-y 80s stuff.
Lyricists. They're both lyricists.
Yeah, they are. Though. And honestly, mm-hmm. I mean, they're great lyricists. You can argue whether or not they're like overly sincere at times or whatever, but it's something to be said for writing an amazing, like, melodic 3-minute pop song. That's it's not easy to do.
Yeah.
And I love, you know, I listen to lots of country too. I listen to lots of older country like Willie Nelson and Johnny Cash, and lots of female singer-songwriters like the Indigo Girls and Tori Amos. It's all over the place, man.
What about contemporary artists? Like, I know Dallas has got, you know, a huge scene, and Denton is nearby. Could you tell us about some of the artists you're following right now that you're intrigued by?
Yeah, we are lucky to be Dallas is really taking off in the last couple of years, which is cool. Daniel Markham is a friend of ours that's actually from out here out west. He's a really good singer-songwriter, really fun to play with. And Claire Morales is another one from Denton that's really doing well right now. She's great. Our friend Salim Nirala helped produce some of my records, and he's a really good songwriter as well. I'm inundated by awesome musicians on all sides, which is great.
You don't need to tell me, sister. You should see the pile
of
the
CDs you've got to listen to. I can see what's behind you.
Incredible promos that I've yet to go through. We are very, very blessed here on the High Plains with great singer-songwriters, local independent artists like yourself. Well, we've just got a minute left. Do you want to just take us out with some beauty to send our Tuesday into to a gorgeous place? But before you start, go ahead and tell us again how we can hear more about your music. And I will link to all of this on our page.
Just go to VanessaPeters.com. All the links are there. Twitter is Vanessa Peters. Facebook is like VanessaPeters.music. And if you want to go to Bandcamp, it's VanessaPeters.bandcamp.com.
That's BANDCAMP.
You got it.
All right. So. All right. This has been High Plains Morning. Vanessa Peters is going to play us out like Keyboard Cat. You guys have a fantastic day, and thank you so much for tuning in.
This is the top of all these years for you guys. Hair so blonde, it's nearly white, like the siding on the house that's faded outside. The room too full of morning light. Can't crawl back in bed.